If you've ever wondered what goes on inside the minds of your male colleagues, this is an episode you do not want to miss. I'm delighted today to be joined by the fantastic Pat Dively, who is a renowned speaker, coach and thought leader in the area of mindset, breathwork and personal empowerment, specifically focusing on the male species. He's like the yin to my yang, we joked on the show, and in this episode, he's going to be offering us really, really valuable insights and strategies for navigating those interpersonal dynamics with a lot more grace and authenticity once you understand what's actually going on in their heads. Be sure to stick around to the end as Pat shares some amazing advice that I definitely think you do not want to miss. Hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to the 360 Leadership Podcast, the top-rated show for driven women in senior leadership, with new episodes released every Wednesday. I'm your host, Lucy Gernon, a multi-award-winning executive coach for women leaders and the founder of 360 Leaders Club, an exclusive high-level membership for career-driven, family-orientated women just like you. I created the 360 Leadership Podcast to share practical tips, actionable step-by-step strategies, and inspiring stories to support you to unlock the power and belief within, to accelerate your impact and potential so you can build a life filled with success, balance and happiness. So are you ready to achieve 360 degree success? No more excuses, no more waiting. Your time is now. Hi everyone and welcome back to another episode of the 360 Leadership Podcast. I'm I'm not even going to say excited. I'm feeling very grateful actually to have a very special guest on the show today, somebody I've admired for a long time, and his name is Pat Dively. So Pat, you're very, very, very welcome to the show today.
Thank you. I'm thrilled. It's good to get to do it. And as you said, we're yin and yang in a sense with who we're working with. So hopefully we can put some good stuff together today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So maybe just if you wanted to start by introducing yourself in your own words to my audience, let them know a little bit about you and where you are now, maybe.
Right now I'm in Thailand. I'm out here for 2 months just training and working on a new book. I train a lot of martial arts. That's a big passion of mine. So I'm out here pursuing that. And who I am, as you mentioned, I started in the fitness industry. That's 15, 16 years ago now, and got into that probably before fitness became what it became. It obviously blew up quite a bit in recent years with social media, and I felt like everyone became a fitness trainer for a while. But I had good success in fitness. I failed with my first business, then I was quite successful with my second and won a lot of entrepreneurial awards back in 2014, 15, 16. I moved from there into kind of personal development. I just kind of fell out of love with the gym. It became a bit, I have a belief in life that you kind of go through different phases and you've got lessons to learn. And once the lessons are learned, you can flog a dead horse or you can kind of move on. And sometimes it's scary to move on, but I knew my days were done with fitness, even though as a business, it was at its peak. I moved more into mindset and goal setting, workshops, all that kind of stuff. As you mentioned, I work with a lot of men. That wasn't always the case. I was working mostly with women in the fitness industry. And then when I moved into personal development, most of the room would be women. And if there was ever a man in the audience, I'd kind of jokingly say, was anyone dragged along? And a few hands would go up from the men. But gradually over the years, it just started to shift. And I suppose the last 4, 5, 6 years, it's been a lot of men's work, which is just the idea of, sharing tools for emotional and mental wellness with men and communication and creating, it's a cliche, but creating safe space where men can sort of, I would say, try on different versions of themselves. We're kind of put in a box, as women are, to be a certain way. And so it can be scary to try with your existing social circle to share your emotions or to communicate differently. And so I try to set up the container that people can come in and experiment with who they are and how they show up. So that's me. I love martial arts. I love traveling. I love my work.
Fabulous. Fabulous. And, I think your work is so, so needed. So I think we might just even just, I just feel like we need to just jump straight into that part about men and emotions. So like, what is it? Obviously you spoke there a second ago about we're put into a box, and obviously we have gender stereotypes. Women are supposed to be humble and all those things and not be too boastful, and men are supposed to be strong. And if men are not strong, all of this, what does that mean for me? So how in your work do you begin to break that down?
a core aspect of my work is always shadow, working with shadow. And what the shadow is the idea that as kids, we're conditioned. So, you know, the kid who's a toddler hopefully can express all of who they are. You'll see a baby cry and then they laugh and then they dance and then they run around naked and there's no shame. But obviously getting a bit older, we start to learn who we need to be. So first we learn at home, okay, we're not, it's not approved of when we're too loud. It's not approved of when we get angry. It's not approved of when we dance or fill in the blank. Every household will be different. And so we quickly learn that for me to be loved and safe in the world as a child, I've got to show up in a certain way. And that becomes our persona. So our mask that we show to the world, persona is the Greek for mask. So we create this mask at home. Okay, my dad loves me when I play sport, but he doesn't really appreciate when I try to sing. And so sport becomes who I am. So my first layer of conditioning is at home, and then I go to school, and now there's another layer where it's not about what my parents want. Now it's about what do my peers approve of? Okay, boys don't cry. Girls don't get angry. That's not very ladylike. All these messages we start to take on. And then a new mask starts to form. And then beyond the family and beyond the school system or the community, there's the culture that we're raised in. So I'm in Thailand right now. There will be a very different set of expectations to maybe what we had in Catholic Ireland versus what's going to happen in different parts of the world. So, you know, things like our gender, our religion, you know, Irish people and drinking and just all these messages. We take on thousands of messages as kids and we all develop a sense of, for me to be loved, accepted and approved of in the world, I need to present this. And if I'm presenting this, it means I need to hide the opposite. So the girl who's told that girls don't get angry becomes very polite and she hides her anger and maybe directs that anger toward herself. The man who's told boys don't cry hides his tears and he shows his stoicism. And then maybe in a relationship years later, he can't connect emotionally because he's disconnected from that part of himself. So in terms of how I work with it, it's first identifying what was put into shadow, what parts of yourself were hidden away because they were bad, wrong, disapproved of, rejected. And then how can we bring them back out in a safe way? Because the way I sort of put it to people is, as a child, you don't have context. You're not able to recognize that, okay, anger is not appropriate when I'm at mass and I want to just start shouting for attention in the church. But maybe anger has its place. We're quite black and white. So I say to people, we put certain parts of ourselves in the good box and other parts in the bad box. And my work is about coming back to those boxes later in life, taking the aspects back out and saying, wait a second, in certain contexts, my anger is really important because maybe it's my assertiveness that lives alongside my anger. And we also have golden shadow, which is our potential, the parts of ourselves when we were told we were too much. Don't be a show off. Stop looking for attention. Who are you to think you can do that? People from our household don't do that. A lot of our potential lives there and we keep ourselves small. It's a very Irish thing as well. You know, yeah. Someone says you've a nice jumper and suddenly, oh, it was from Penny's and it's So it's recognizing what do we put there and how can we repurpose these parts, not make them bad, but recognize that everything's got its place.
Mm-hmm. I love that you're doing that work. Like I've done that work myself and it literally was a catalyst for everything for me, but it's painful, right? It's painful to go there. So I think people, you know, while I think the work is, I think it's the key actually. I think it's the key to everything is going there. So what would you say to somebody who's listening to the show now and they know they have those parts of themselves, they know they've been living their lives to please other people. Like that's literally what we've been doing. What would you say to them?
There's different things. I mean, one thing I would say is, you know, what we resist will persist, which is the idea that like a beach ball, if you push a beach ball underwater, you can only push it down so much before it's going to generate a lot of force and it's going to pop back up. So any part of yourself you reject or you try to push away will come and take on a life of its own. It's like the person who is very nice and very polite all the time and is a people pleaser. And then suddenly they have a road rage that just comes out of nowhere. So I would say it's important that we address this stuff. You can come to this stuff when you have a midlife crisis or you have an identity crisis or your world falls apart and then you're kind of forced to look at it. Or maybe when you're in a more grounded place and things are going okay, you could gently start to explore. So I would say recognize that the work, for me at least, I believe the work is needed. It's one quote that Carl Jung had, who was a famous Swiss psychiatrist that talked about the shadow, was the idea that 90% of the shadow is pure gold. So although it's painful, although it sometimes feels icky, you feel shame around certain aspects of yourself, generally, there's massive gifts. And we all know that from our life experience. There's generally more gifts and more learning in our failures than there ever is our success. I would also say to people that the bigger the challenges you have in life, the more support you need. So get support, and I would say take it slowly. Yeah, those would be my core messages. Mm-hmm. I think do the work, take it slow, get support, and you can come waiting for it to knock on your door and have your life fall apart, or you can hopefully come at it from a place of, okay, I'm in a good place now, but I'm going to gently explore becoming more of who I am, allowing myself to be more of who I am. Mm-hmm. Because my experience is ultimately, if we don't, particularly in business, we see it in the business world, we see, you know, it was my life in my 20s to have a lot of insecurity, a lot of self-doubt, a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot of I'm not enough. And that's what drove most of my decisions in my 20s to chase all these goals, achieve a lot of goals. But my experience was everything I achieved just put a bigger magnifying glass on my insecurities, because yeah. I thought, when I do this thing, I'll feel great. But then I do the thing and then I think, geez, I must be really flawed if I'm achieving things and I still feel like this about myself. So oftentimes we run away from those parts and we try to outrun them. But it's you. It's a part of you. So you can't outrun it. So yeah, go gentle, go slow, but lean in.
I love that. And I always think as well, like, you know, I don't know, do you know Abraham Hicks, or do you ever listen to any of that stuff? Like, but, you know, she talks a lot about alignment, and where you're not in alignment, you're going to feel resistance. So if you ever feel resistance, it just means you are not in alignment with who you are. And when you have the resistance, it's, you know, you're frustrated, you're angry, you're not feeling good. So I always know that for me, that's a real trigger for me. If I feel, and not that negative emotions are bad, because we have to feel them, we have to have the contrast, right? But I always feel like if I'm feeling frustrated, or if I'm feeling jealous in particular and things like that, then I go back into myself and I'm like, whoa, where is this coming from? Like, this does not need to happen. So I think too, like, I was going to ask you, I was going to just share that when I first started my coaching journey, I remember one of my first business coach, she was excellent. She was in the game a long time. She was in the US, and she brought everything back to basics, like really basic stuff of how to start a coaching business. And I remember she talked to me about the different coaching archetypes, and I don't remember them all offhand, but I think she had four different archetypes. And she was sharing with me that it was really, really important for me as a coach, and for you and for everybody, to really express, you know, who are we as a coach. So for anyone listening, like, who are you as a leader? So for example, I know one of them was like the, I think she called it something like the superstar, which is the person who likes to be, you know, in front of people, who likes the attention, and, you know, who sees himself on stages. And when she was saying that to me, I knew inside that I kind of wanted to be that person. But I didn't have the confidence to do it. But I felt it. I was like, I do want to be on stages. But then the voice pops up, right? Who do you think you are? And you're not going to do this. But now that I am, I know that cue was there for me years ago. So I think it's really important for people listening to know that you can't push away who you really are. It's always going to be there, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it changes, you know, as I said, you know, for me, there were certain things I wanted to do in my 20s that were my lifelong dreams. And when I got there, I thought, okay, I enjoyed it, but now I'm ready for something different. So we shift and we morph. And I think my big encouragement to people with any of this work is around, it's about being adaptable, like having the capacity to be flexible and be adaptable in who you are. Like the challenge for a lot of men that I work with is that they've been conditioned to live in their warrior. So warrior is an archetype that's all about doing. And same for a lot of women in the corporate world. Like, it's, I want to get things done, I want to hit this target. It's a very linear way of thinking, which is great, you know, and it gets things done and it's got its value, like all other archetypes and all other aspects. But where it becomes a challenge is when we're stuck in that one dimension and we come home and we can't move out of that. And so we're talking to our kids like, you know, we're trying to get projects done. We're just kind of, again, not able to connect. So I always talk about range, like, what is my range? So the warrior is one aspect, again, getting things done, moving in the right direction, setting boundaries, protecting the kingdom and protecting what's important in our lives. But then there's other aspects. There's the lover, which is all about connection. So can I connect? And those kind of work in conflict to one another, but they can also be complementary. So again, the man who comes home from work and is very successful in that warrior role, not being able to shift into lover and being present with his partner and his children, will result in a misalignment and result in a lot of stress, and ultimately it becomes an issue. So it's, how do we start to practice different parts of ourselves? So from 9 to 5, maybe I need a lot of warrior. Then I go home, maybe I need to tap more into lover. And then when there's a crisis, I need to move into my king or my sovereign, which is more about the vision for our lives. So it's, yeah, recognizing different energies. There's times where you're going to want to be the superstar aspect of yourself and that archetype. But if you start going around like that in all of your life and that's the only thing you can access, you're probably going to piss off your friends, you know? So it's, and you know, as we talk about at the start, when we've received all these messages about who we need to be, that range becomes very small. It's like, I'm only allowing myself to be this and this, or I'm only allowed to be this and this. I'm a people pleaser and I'm a nice guy. And that's fine. But if that's all I have access to, my life is going to be quite small, quite limited, and I'm going to limit my vision for myself. So it's, yeah, how am I showing up and how do I want to show up? And can I allow myself to be different?
Mm. And so this is, let's just talk about the male mind while we're on this topic. So everything that you've been sharing, obviously I resonate with deeply, and I know all of my clients that I work with resonate with. So tell me about the male, I suppose, are we the same?
Are we the same? Well, as you know, there's the idea of like masculine and feminine energies, and you know, we all have these energies within us. It's just different for everyone. So the way I would put it to people is that, you know, a man who's very artistic and maybe very musical and that kind of archetypal creative energy is more in the feminine energy, where there's flow and there's chaos and there's creativity and there's the unknown and there's possibility and there's flow. Whereas the traditional maybe engineer or I don't know, accountant is very much in the masculine, where it's more directed, it's more linear. So we all have these, you know, male or female. Is it different? I think there's fundamental differences. You know, ultimately, I think those first years of our lives and the messages we received become our blueprint for the rest of our lives. The man who is told, don't feel your feelings. I often tell people that as a boy, I was told, boys don't cry. I also was fearful of being too joyful, because that would lead to being judged and being shamed. You know, you were probably called gay or something at the time when you were a kid, which is a scary thing to be called if you were too playful, being too much of anything other than, I would say, anger was safe to show as a boy, because if I'm angry, you're not going to mess with me. So anger becomes my default setting. That's an easy one for me to go to. I'm not saying me personally, but for as men, you know, that's what a lot of us will have been taught. So I think, you know, again, if that's the message I received, then I'm going to struggle with my emotions probably as a man. And if I struggle with my emotions and recognizing my own emotions, that's in turn going to help, or sorry, that's going to lead me to struggling with other people's emotions. If I can't be with my own sadness, when someone else cries, I'm going to quickly grab a box of tissues, and I'm not grabbing the tissues for them. I'm grabbing it for myself because I don't feel comfortable. Mm. But when I've been with my sadness, which I have, I can hold men twice my age in my arms as they sob. You know, I work with men that have not cried in 30 years. Guys that lost their fathers when they were kids and held all this sadness and grief for losing their childhood because they became the man of the house. Aww. And they never got to cry, you know, and look, same for women. We all have our stuff. So it's, is it different? Yeah, it's different. And we're all human. It's all about what you said. It's about alignment. And for me, being aligned is being honest about what I feel. Mm-hmm. A lot of us as kids, you know, we felt our feelings, and because our parents maybe didn't know how to, you know, imagine a child says, I'm scared. They see a spider. Oh, I'm scared. And the parent says, don't be silly. It's just a spider. There's a weird disconnect that happens there where the child feels a feeling. They mm-hmm. viscerally feel it in their body. And then the grown-up superhero is saying, don't be silly. Mm-hmm. So there's this disconnection. Can I trust what I feel? Because the superhero is saying that there's nothing to be fearful of, mm-hmm. as opposed to maybe a parent saying, oh, I get it. It makes sense that it's scary, but you're going to be okay. So I find oftentimes we relate to our own emotions later in life the same way that our parents maybe, or our caregivers related to them. So mm-hmm. If you felt anxious when you were young and someone said, when I was young, I didn't have time to be anxious. Probably as an adult, you tell yourself when you feel anxious that you don't have time to be anxious. So it's,
It's interesting, isn't it? Like, and I think that childhood stuff, like, I mean, I know we're talking deep stuff today, and I love this because, you know, I've done the work and it really is the thing that's going to move you forward, but it's scary and it's hard. And, you know, and I think the biggest shift that people can make is to understand. And I always say this to my people too, is like, you're not a little girl anymore. You're not a little boy anymore. You know, you get to make your own choices. They're not there and you don't have to please them. And I think as well, like, I know Tony Robbins, love him or hate him. I just remember watching something with him before, and he was saying, you know, we blame our parents for a lot of stuff, but if you're going to blame them for all the bad stuff, you have to blame them for the good stuff too. You have to blame them. You wouldn't be half the person you are today if your parents hadn't done those things, quote unquote, to you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, 100%. I work with a client just recently, and there was a lot of resentment toward his father. And so we listed some of the things that he resented about his father. And what I challenged him with, which is a difficult thing to do, is to tell me all of the positives that came from those things that he resented. So there was a resent around the fact that his father worked all the time. I said, give me 10 positives about the fact that your father worked all the time. So he said, well, I found a hobby in the gym because I didn't have him to hang out with. So I went to the gym, and the gym ended up being a big influence in my life. And I connected with certain friends in my life. So it's not about making someone's behavior right or wrong. It's just about noticing that when we look back on our past and we see something as a negative, it's because we're only seeing it through the filter of negative. But if we can go back with perspective and we can say, well, there was probably some positives here too, we can find the positive. We can just start to take some of the charge out of it. And the same is true of the reverse. Like, you know, if you look back with blissful eyes to your, I don't know, coming out of school and traveling the world, and that was the perfect time and I had no stress, you're looking at it as a positive experience because you only remember the positive, but there was probably drawbacks as well. Your friends that stayed at home probably started building their career a little bit earlier. There was advantages to that. So there's always an upside and a downside, I think, to everything. But I definitely agree that, you know, taking responsibility is both sides of the coin. If you're going to blame someone, you need to also appreciate, yeah, what they did. And none of us would be where we are now. There's certain aspects of all of our lives that probably we're not content with right now, but we have to recognize that everything that has happened in our life has brought us to the position where we are now. So if I work with a client who's got a business that turns over huge money and there's a lot of resentments from the past, in a way, everything that happened led to where we are now. So now if we can go back and we can heal the wounds, then we can hopefully make peace and enjoy the experience now without that heaviness, you know?
And how would you say somebody could put aside their ego? That's what I found, like when I had to go back and kind of look at, you know, all the things I was blaming my parents for, I had to be a big girl and put my ego to the side and go, right, I think that's the biggest block. Like if you, you know, I was going back to what you said about only seeing things through a negative lens, you're only going to see it. But in order to be open to seeing it in a different way, for me, you've got to put aside the ego and put the big girl pants or the big boy pants on and just get ready. But how would you recommend somebody begin to do that? This is an exciting ad about a course for anyone who wants to build visibility in the press and stand out as an expert in their field. Quick Media Wins is a course created by renowned journalist Bianca Barrett, which I personally took, helping me secure my first Forbes feature. It is absolutely jam-packed full of techniques and tips a PR agency charging thousands a month would use. Imagine if millions or even billions of people knew about you. What would that do for your career? And how much easier would that make things? Whether you're a corporate executive who wants to build visibility and become known on the world stage, or an entrepreneur or coach dreaming of easier sales, unshakable expert status, or dream invites to really cool opportunities, this is the DIY Lifetime Access course where you'll master landing quick media coverage in as little as 7 days. And best of all, when you use my special link in the description, you get 25% off using the discount code. So head over to the description, click the link to learn more.
There's a lot of different ways. One exercise I really like as the starting point is to recognize we're all living in a story. So we all have a story that we're recreating in our lives. Like there's lots of different stories. Like I have stories about men, I have stories about women, I have stories about Irish people, stories about people in my profession, of all these beliefs that are there. But I think deep, deep down, there's one big story that's running our lives. And an exercise I often give to people is to look back over your life and to break it down into different chapters. So the first 6 years of your life, and then the next six, and then the next six, and then the next six, all the way up to your current age. And you would write just in simple language, a couple of lines as to if this was a movie or a book, what was the story? So it's okay, first 6 years of my life, I'm happy at home, everything's good, playing lots of sport, feeling good, got two younger siblings, all is well. Next chapter, I start school, I'm bullied on the first day of school, I feel completely unsafe in the world. And you go through all your chapters, and what you'll often find is that you're recreating the same narrative again and again and again. So again, for me in my 20s, I was successful, I made good money, I bought a house, I bought a car, I had a great girlfriend, I ticked all the boxes I was supposed to tick. But I was still living inside of my 7-year-old story that I don't fit in, that I'm not enough, that I'm the victim of bullying, all that kind of stuff. So that can be a good exercise to help you recognize that something you decided as a child without perspective, without context, is just being replayed. And whatever you believe, you will recreate. It's an old cliche, but you buy a new pair of shoes, you walk into the city, you'll start seeing those shoes everywhere, not because they weren't there before, but because you're aware of them now because you have them. So we create what we believe. So I think that's an exercise that can be useful, as a starting point to recognize your story.
And I think that's really, really, really important. So if you're multitasking, people, come back to me and please listen to what Pat just said. Everything is a story. Everything is a story. You know, you can choose to look at anything in any way and tell a story. And it's all coming from your beliefs, your values, your conditioning. But you can write a new story at any time. You can choose. It's about choice, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a story about a story, but there's...
Tell us.
Yeah, well, there's this analogy I heard years ago that's quite nice. And it's two kids that came from alcoholic parents. And one of them never drops it or drinks a drop of drink in his life. And they ask him, why don't you drink? And he says, well, my father was an alcoholic. And the other fellow becomes an alcoholic. And they ask him, how'd you become an alcoholic? He said, well, my father was an alcoholic. So what else was it going to be? So that's kind of the idea that ultimately what happens is we have experiences in life. The experience itself is neutral. Like if I go out and I walk on the street and I ask a stranger out and they say no to me, I can build a story about rejection. You looking from the outside in will have no emotional attachment to it. So you're not, you know, so it's when we're emotionally invested in, again, when the ego is playing out. So actually another little exercise that really I think is useful is called the ABCD. And this is for when you're experiencing stress or resentments, or you're challenged by people, or you're challenged by yourself, or there's any frustrations. ABCD is a journaling practice where A is to write down the activating event. So what happened specifically that has been the source of what you're feeling? So you wouldn't say, I'm stressed because my friend showed up late. You would just go to the activating event. What would a camera have seen with no emotional investment? So said I would meet my friend at 2, my friend arrived at 2:30. So that's the activating event. And then B is where you figure out the belief. So what did I make that mean? This is the key, is recognizing things happen and we give them meanings. And generally the meanings are based on our past. I heard a story years ago that when Brad Pitt moved to Hollywood as a young lad, everyone was staring at him and he had a belief that they were staring because he was ugly. So I don't think anyone else believes
that. Come on, Brad.
So A, activating event. What happened? B, what did you make it mean? So you gave it a meaning. So friend showed up late for lunch. One person might say, oh, my friend's got a lot going on. That might be the belief that they had it. Another friend might say, my friend doesn't respect me. And if my belief is my friend doesn't respect me, it's probably a deeper narrative that I carry into different relationships in my life. My boss doesn't respect me. My partner doesn't respect me. So A and B. And then C is figure out what are the consequences. So what happens when I believe the story my friend doesn't respect me? Well, I'm a bit snappy with them. I'm a little bit hostile. I'm not really enjoying the lunch when they do show up. It puts me in bad form for the rest of the day. Then I take it out my part. So there are consequences. And then the final piece, which is where the ego gets challenged, is D, which is to dispute. So imagine you're in court and the other side of the opposition are fighting for the belief that your friend doesn't respect you, but you're fighting for the belief that your friend does respect you. And you're going to find all the evidence that makes that true. So they've never shown up late before. They were there for me in recent times when I was struggling. There'll be a list of evidence that your friend does potentially support you. And it just, again, it's not about making someone's poor behavior right. It's about finding perspective. So what happened? What did you make it mean? What are the consequences to that belief? And where's some evidence that that belief might not be true?
I love that ABCD. I'm going to be ABCD in my way through the next couple of weeks for sure. So do you know what I'm just thinking as you're saying that? We've been talking for about the last half an hour and you have literally given us the blueprint to break through. Like you have, and girls, I hope you know this, and ladies and men, whoever's listening, you've given us the steps, you've given us the tools. Literally, you've spoken about exactly how to do it. But the problem that I see with a lot of people is they don't want to do the work. And it's hard, and it takes, you have to set aside time and you have to get serious about it. So how can we encourage people, like, knowing that I know that the benefits and you know the benefits when you do the work, quote unquote, are huge. How can we encourage people to do the work?
I suppose as practical as possible. I always start with a couple of journaling prompts. Like when I run corporate workshops, I'll just give a couple of simple exercises and I'll say to people, look, these are free to do. Do them for 2 or 3 weeks. See if it makes an impact. If it does, keep doing them. And it's really simple stuff. I'll say for 10 minutes in the morning or even 5 minutes, take out pen and paper, write down 3 priorities you have for the day. and also write down why each of those things are a priority to give it a bit of leverage. Write down three things you're grateful for. And again, also write why. Otherwise, it can just be a like to-do list. I'm just writing down, oh, I'm grateful for coffee. But if you think, why am I grateful for each thing? And third question I encourage people to ask in the morning is, what am I most excited for in the day ahead? And it just gives people a chance to be mindful of, okay, I have a little bit of control here. Rather than looking at my phone, I'm going to start with, what am I grateful for? What are my priorities? What am I excited for? And then in the evening, I encourage people to sit down and ask, who did I help today, to kind of tune into a bit of contribution? Like, have you helped anyone? Now, what did I learn today? Kind of Tony Robbins stuff. So, you know, even if it was the worst day in the world, can I take something positive from it? A big fight with my partner. I learned how not to tease my partner, whatever it is. And big one in the evening, a huge one, I think, for building confidence, which I think is something important for us all. I say, if you go to a football game and there's parents on the sideline and one of them is roaring at their kids, whatever the kid does, they're just giving them grief and they're expecting more, and they never acknowledge the kid's progress, that child's self-esteem will shrink. If there's a parent who has the same level of child, like the child playing at the same level, and they're constantly saying, well done, you're doing good, oh, you missed, but you'll get the next one. If there's that kind of encouragement, that child will grow in confidence. And it's the same for us. Like you were saying earlier, you know, we grow up, we're not little girls anymore, not little boys anymore. But I think there's a part of us, like a younger part, that's looking, the insecure part in us all is almost like an inner child. And so I think in the evening, sitting down and writing down three wins that you had for the day, and again, writing the reason why those things were relevant, can help you to just take a few minutes to recognize, like, your inner critic's going to do a great job of finding everywhere you were wrong, everywhere you fell short, everything you're lacking. So having a conscious practice, I think, of recognizing where you're achieving, particularly if there's one specific area. So let's say you're focused on your health, write down three health wins. If you're focused on your leadership, write down three leadership wins. Those would be some starting points, I think, in terms of practical. The other thing I would say is, oftentimes, of course, we're inspired by either inspiration or desperation. So desperation is, things get so bad in life that I say I have to change. Inspiration is, I'm just so lit up and so fired up about something that drives me. And I think a lot of us can easily get caught in the middle where things are fine, things are grand, and so I don't really need to change, I don't really need to look at that stuff or whatever. Our way where you can get leverage is to say, if nothing changes in my life and I don't lean into this, where will I be in 5 years? Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be in the same place, because you're going to be 5 years older. People think, oh, if I do lean into this stuff, where could I be in 5 years? Or, you know, say someone's drinking too much, or they're having a couple of glasses of wine a couple of nights a week, and they feel it's maybe it's grand, but they want to make a change. That kind of question of, what's the impact of this over 5 years? Because it's grand for a week, or it's grand for a month, or it's grand for a certain period of time. But I think that's a way of getting leverage and recognizing the importance of the work is to, where will I be in 5 years if I do it? Where will I be in 5 years if I don't?
Yeah. And you could be dead within those 5 years. Let's keep it real. You know, like, I don't mean to be, I'm so blunt, but like a friend of mine sadly passed away only a couple of weeks ago. She was 43 years old. She was about to qualify as a solicitor. She had gone back to college. She had done what you had said, you know, which I loved what you talked about earlier. You know, you don't have to be one thing your whole life. You can change. And now she's gone from this earth. And I just think it was a really sudden reminder to me again, you know, when these events happen, like we only get one shot, and we're only here, I believe, and I go, I know I'm quite spiritual, but I believe we're only, you know, we're a spirit having a human experience, and we're here to experience certain things on this earth, and then we go, you know. So we're not going to be around forever, so let's not take this gift of life for granted, and let's just go and do the work on ourselves. That's what I think.
Yeah, break the cycles, break the patterns. Yeah, break our own cycles and patterns, and maybe break the generational things.
Absolutely. Let's be the change breakers.
Yeah, and talking about doing the work, you know, if there is resistance to doing the work, and if people had maybe resentments toward their parents or any of that stuff we touched on earlier, which some people would be the opposite, you know, but my belief is, if you don't look at that stuff, you'll just recreate it with your own kids. You think, ooh, you won't, but you will. You know?
That's powerful. That's powerful.
I don't know, if maybe a bit of a sideline, but the person who says, I'm never going to be like my father, or I'm never going to be like my mother, is not in alignment with their own life, because they're just creating an oppositional identity. They're just saying, I'm going to be the opposite because I don't like that person. So they're not choosing who to be in life. They're just reacting.
Oh my goodness. Mic drop.
So you're just reacting, you know? So that's what the shadow is. That's choosing, okay, I'm not going to be an angry person, or I'm not going to be a, don't choose who you're not going to be. Decide who you're going to be, I think.
Yeah. And there's another really powerful exercise I remember a coach did with me before. And she was like, write down all the things you want to be. So I wrote down, I want to be kind, I want to be funny, I want to be smart, I want to be helpful. I wrote in all of these things. And then she just turned to me and she went, well, that's who you really are. Because it already lives inside you. That is who you are. And you're just reconnecting. So I find that's really powerful. Ask yourself, who do you want to be? And that is actually who you really are. So that really helped me for sure.
Yeah, and you can take that and you can, you know, make that the journaling practice in the morning. That, okay, I want to be playful, kind and compassionate. And then you can ask yourself, what's one thing for each of those traits that I can do today to put that into the real world, to turn it from an idea to it's there, but maybe it's dormant in some of us, you know, so the person who doesn't.
I'm going to have to go back through this and pull out all of these amazing journal prompts and put them in this episode, because there's some really, really powerful stuff here, Pat. Thank you. Okay, so I just want to talk to you a little bit before we finish up about the corporate world and the male egos and the boys club and all of the masculine energy, the dominance, that the intimidation. How can we create more harmony in the corporate world? Because that is like my ultimate goal with the work I do.
Well, this tyrannical piece that we see across like politics and media and corporate and all that kind of stuff, that's come from the wound of not enough. So we talk about these archetypes earlier on, the king, the warrior, the magician and the lover. So these are different aspects of the male psyche. The warrior is the action taker. The lover is the part that connects. The magician is the strategizer. The king, or in the female case, the queen, so the sovereign part of us, when it's healthy, there's a belief that we're enough and so we can be of service. So if I believe I'm enough, I can be of service to the world. But the wound that comes in as young boys or teenagers, whatever it might be, is I'm not enough. And when the belief is I'm not enough, there's two ways you can respond. One way is you deflate and you almost collapse and you become the weakling. And so this is the person who gives their power away and puts people on pedestals. So I'm waiting for the government to save me. I'm waiting for, you know, whatever. I'm looking outside of myself. The opposite of that is the tyrant. So the tyrant is the person who deep down believes they're not enough, but they're going to do everything in their power to make you believe that they're enough. So they'll hold power over other people. So that's ultimately what we're seeing is tyrannical behavior. The likes of certain politicians that, you know, true power is obviously a connection to ourselves, a connection to our vision. So I think, again, it comes down to the individuals doing the work, unfortunately, or fortunately. It would be a very different world, you know, politically, socially, culturally, if the people that are in charge and up there were actually healing their wounds. Mm.
And how would you recommend, like, sorry to interrupt just while we're on the flow of that. If I'm working in the corporate world and I'm dealing with somebody who has that tyrannical behavior, either male or female, because we're talking about this like more masculine energy, right? How would you recommend, like, what do they need to hear, that person, to calm it down?
You are enough.
Yeah, imagine you are enough. That
break down. What do they need to hear? I'm not sure is the answer to that.
But like, I'm just wondering, like, I'm imagining if you're in a meeting and this person is, you know, obviously they're in their chimp mode, you know, they're all activated, they're all aggressive. How would you recommend somebody deals with that kind of energy?
Well, across the board with communication, when one person gets activated, it creates activation in the other person. So I think the first thing is recognizing that in ourselves. So ultimately what's happening is we're adults, and when the child in us gets fearful or wounded, so the corporate person who's been a tyrant, ultimately what's happening there is there's a wounded part of them that is fearful that they're not enough, and you're going to see that. And so then there's a protective part, which is the tyrant, that's going to do everything in its power to keep the little boy safe in that man. And so when he goes to tyrant, if the little girl in you or the little boy in you then gets scared and you go to your defense strategy, which for some people is to be a people pleaser and to give in to him and to just like bow down to him. For others, it's to be confrontational and to get into so we all have our own defensive patterns. So I would say part of it is recognizing your own pattern. So how do you relate to authority, or how do you relate to people in power that demonstrate those kind of tendencies? What is your strategy? So how do you usually show up? So for me, oftentimes when people get like that, my default setting is to appease and to shrink and to become a people pleaser. So in terms of how I communicate consciously, I think my work is to stay grounded and to stay in my adult self and not revert back to those defense strategies and be present and be able to communicate clearly, not from a place of reaction, but from a place of grounding. So it's taking a few breaths, feeling my feet on the ground, communicating clearly, And ultimately what you're doing there is you're giving the other person a chance to step back into adult, because if you meet that, if you meet them with defensive strategy, then you're just going into back and forth. So it's slowing things down, taking a breath, communicating. Obviously, you know, with communication, a lot of it's about communicating my feelings. I feel overwhelmed when I hear this, as opposed to you made me feel overwhelmed. If we start pointing fingers, so it's about, this is what I feel when this happens in work. This is what I need in order for me to feel appreciated. Would it be possible? So it's demonstrate, okay, this is what I felt, this is what I need, and then making a request. And that would be some of the pieces I would look to.
Love that. Love that. And I think it's really important too to remember it's not about you. It's all about them and that unhealed, that wounded part of themselves. So I think that's really, really, really good advice. Okay, Pat. So thank you so much for being on the show. There's so many, I just love the depth of this conversation. So thank you for bringing this depth to the show. Before we finish up, I would love to just ask you a couple of questions that I ask all of my guests. The first one is, what is the best piece of advice you have ever received? One of them, even.
One of them. I don't know if it was like one specific word, but my father always just kind of, I remember him telling me when I was younger, just about keeping my circle small, like having a small group of real friends, you know, keeping my head down, doing my work, not getting caught up in rubbish and messing and stuff like that. So it was more of a kind of, I guess my father's advice was just to live a simple life and to be a good person. So it's quite cliche and it's quite basic, but as I get older, I see the value in that, because my 20s were caught up in trying to be somebody and all that kind of stuff, and definitely much more comfortable in my own skin now with trying to live a simpler life. So I think that's kind of it. Don't get caught up in trying to impress people.
Yeah. And what about a piece of advice? If you were lying on your deathbed now and you had one last thing to say to people, what would you say?
It comes down to my beliefs again. My belief, similar to what you mentioned earlier, is we come into this world and we have an experience. And I think life is about collecting lessons. So experiences come to you, and we were all sent here to learn different lessons in this lifetime. And if you learn the lesson, you get to experience more lessons. If you don't, you just keep repeating the same loops in your life. But what I would tell people is, I don't know this to be true, but I believe that we're just going to come back and do it all again. So take the pressure off yourself. Stop trying to be perfect. Stop trying to do everything. Stop trying to allow yourself to make mistakes. Allow yourself to fail. Allow yourself to change. That's probably my advice, actually. Allow yourself to change. You don't have to be who you were. You're a dynamic individual. You have got energy that you can express in a million different ways. So don't get caught in a box.
Pat, thank you so much for coming on the show. Tell us, where can people find you?
PatDibley.com is my website, and I'm trying to get better on LinkedIn. So I'm following your lead on LinkedIn.
So everyone come over to LinkedIn, connect with Pat, and we'll get him posting loads of content soon. What about Instagram? Are you still on Instagram or not so much?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram as well. Yeah. I have an interesting relationship with social media. You kind of have to do it, don't you?
But
it's trying to navigate, to be honest, ways of doing it in a way that I enjoy, that can also be of help, you know?
Exactly. Well, listen, we link Pat's website in the show notes. Pat, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.